Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast. My name is Sean, I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host Greg. How's it going, Greg?
It's doing good tonight.
Sweet. Good deal. Well, hey, we've got a lot of fun new stuff to talk about. Ixalan is upon us. We have a Star City Games event under our belts, ready to start digging into some data here. But before we get too deep into that, how has your week been?
You know, it's been slow. Although, got to play some EDH at the beginning. That's good.
Good deal. Always good to play some EDH. I'm on my last week of paid family leave before I get to go back to work. So, not looking forward to that. But you know what the best part about that is? I will once again be driving for hours. I'll be able to catch up on all the Magic podcasts that I've missed. I've been producing this every week, but, you know, a large part of my work day involved actually listening to all these other podcasts, which is always fun. So I am looking forward to that, getting back into the swing of things. But
It'll take some time.
It will. But in the meantime, we've got some really fun stuff to talk about, including our sponsor, Flipside Gaming, at flipsidegaming.com. Any purchase you make on flipsidegaming.com, use the promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, and any order over $10, you will save 10%. And the proceeds will go to help us fund some future show giveaways. I think we're actually going to be doing a giveaway coming up here on our 30th episode. I can't believe this is our 26th episode. These are going by so fast.
Pretty quick.
Pretty quick indeed. So head over to flipsidegaming.com, order some product, and use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps. They're a great service. I know that's where I got my Commander 17 product from. It came in a very timely manner, and I was very pleased with the service. So check them out. And moving right along, let's head on into a subject that we always love to talk about every week that it's available, and that is at the Lore Corner. When we last left our intrepid explorers on the continent of Ixalan, we join up once again with Jace and Vraska on the Belligerent. Do you wanna kick us off here, Greg?
So they just successfully plundered the Legion of Dusk ship, and they were heading their way to the High and Dry. So they make their way over a couple weeks' time to the High and Dry, where once they get there, they don't have to worry about spending a bunch of money, and they come and one of the goblin hands named Breaches is talking about cards and ale, chanting, and then it's debt cards and ale, and festivities. It is quite a funny moment. And Vraska and the Helm's Mage, I believe it was, is telling them, oh, you guys go on ahead, we'll catch up later. And at this point is when Jason and Vraska start talking about what's Vraska's mission, what the Thematic Compass is doing, how it's taking them to Orozca, and who is her employer.
Right.
That being a Sir Nicholas.
Sir Nicholas, yes, indeed. And when they do dock at the port, they actually head towards a different location than where everyone else is going to participate in those cards and ale. They head to the Boatswain's Rear, a really seedy, kind of divey place that you won't necessarily see the most highfalutin individuals, you know, at this establishment. So when they arrive here, they sit down, and yes, they do start talking about the mission. And this is a moment, again, where we start to see more of a development in the relationship between Vraska and Jace. again, Jace is still just chomping at the bit to learn as much as he possibly can. Yeah. And Vraska thinks to, you know, she actually asks Jace, you know, hey, are you comfortable in a place like this? You know, wondering if he's going to be okay. And he goes, it's fascinating. So he's already just jumping in head first thinking, yeah, ooh, this is exciting. Like, I like this kind of adventure. So they sit down and they start talking. And one of the more interesting parts here while they're talking says, Vraska's asking him about, you know, this special assignment, and they need to go and infiltrate the lost city. They need to go and find Orozca. And right when Vraska tells Jace they need to go find Orozca, a merfolk off in the corner thinks to himself, no. And Jace hears it. He whips his head around and looks directly at the merfolk. And the merfolk is like, I didn't say anything. What the heck? And he's like, something's up. And Jace is like, oh, wow, he didn't say anything. I just read his mind. So he's already thinking, you know, oh, okay, well, something fishy's here. And Vraska's like, well, don't worry about it. No harm done. Let's just keep talking.
Mm-hmm.
So Jace is really curious about his ability to read people's minds. And so he actually starts to ask Vraska, you know, can I read minds? And Vraska, well, all of a sudden,
was I a mind reader?
Was I a mind reader, right? And Vraska already does not want to unleash up onto Jace his real abilities, because she is still a little fearful of what he's capable of doing. But she sees his vulnerability, and she admits to him, yes, you can read minds. So
it was kind of interesting to see her say that. And then following that shortly, she says, but you don't read mine or my crew's.
Right.
Period.
Hands off.
And he's like, mine's okay. Yeah. So then he asks, well, what can you tell me about the world we come from? And she kind of goes into this diatribe, this long-winded, just talking about it and how she loved it and she misses it. And Jace can see this homesickness on her and kind of a wanting, and her mind kind of wanders to that, and he catches a glimpse of Ravnica. Probably the Borough section in, you know, winter, so there's snow. And he asks her if it's okay if he can show her what he saw. So the area around High and Dry, where they were walking at the time, transforms into Ravnica in winter. And she just kind of gets this glint in her eye and is like, this is exactly what I miss. And then she kind of looks at Jace and says, that wasn't okay. I mean, I don't think she actually says that one. I don't remember the quote exactly. But she's like, you read my mind. And I was like, yeah, but I thought you'd like this kind of thing.
Yep.
So they make their way back. And after seeing this, Jay says, do you want to go back to the rest of the crew? And she's like, not really. So they go back to the ship. And they kind of talk. They're having good, lighthearted conversation.
Right. Well, if I can interject for just a moment before they actually left the place, there's one moment where Jace is you know, in this conversation with Vraska, and right when he kills the illusion of Ravnica, it says the illusion vanished, but the look of guarded wonder on Vraska's face remained. She was beautiful. And we see it just a teeny smidgen of a moment where Jace says Vraska is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to speculation on that later. But I really wanted to point that out because it is a very interesting story point. But I'm sorry, continue.
So after that, they get back to the ship, and Jace just, he's chomping at the bit. He's got to know more about Ravnica. I mean, it's where he comes from, it's where she's homesick for, and in a moment of vulnerability, she kind of talks about how she doesn't have all the fond memories of Ravnica. because she hasn't always been on the surface. She's been in prison. And Jace decides he doesn't want to push that too much. And he thinks for a moment. He's like, come on down to the galley with me. So they go to the galley. And he does his best to brew some tea. And Vraska says it's good. I mean, who doesn't like a good cup of tea? Anyhow, this moment of just, you know, kind of this person looking into her as who she is makes her feel like she can talk about what happened on Ravnica way back when she was just a normal Gorgon. And yep.
Jace makes a very very interesting string of points here, but mostly hammering home the fact that, you know, Vraska has these preconceived notions about who Jace was before, and Jace is starting to almost preach to Vraska because he sees that she's not happy with her past, and he's saying, hey, I know that you are a great leader, and I'm telling you that everybody is, they're a culmination of all that they've experienced and what has shaped them, but, you know, the past is the past, and who a person is how they approach the future and Definitely. How they better themselves based on the lessons that they have learned. And this really touches Vraska a lot because she is confided in Jace all these, you
know. Don't forget that in talking about this, he also brings up the fact that she's already the leader she wanted to be. Whatever right. Sir Nicholas has promised her is, right. it's already done. Like, yeah. she doesn't need this dude's power. She can do it on her own already. And it's up to her to have people look at her.
Right, and she's already told Jace that, you know, minds are fragile, or he actually realized this. And so yeah. he knows his own power is quite volatile as well.
Yeah, I think he quoted as a sledgehammer in a china shop.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that almost bears quoting here. I can't quite find it right now, but let's see here. Okay, I'm going to find it.
Of course you're going to go find it.
Yeah, right. Because it was the first time that she's ever heard him swear, and I thought that was pretty funny. I thought that was really funny. Here we go. Jace crossed his arms and stared upward at the sky. Minds are absurdly delicate. Everything that makes a person who they are is as fragile as a cobweb. Vraska says, you're a sledgehammer surrounded by cobwebs. She said plainly, you realize that, right? A goddamn sledgehammer, Jace mused, a pit of dread opening in his guts. So, yeah, she, you know, they're both, you know, kind of talking to each other and building each other up, letting each other know what they're capable of doing, and they're finding strength in that through each other. So it's just a wonderful parallel of characters that we never thought we would see conspiring or even, you know, working in, you know, conjunction with each other, but now they're seeming to be a great match, and so it's very interesting.
A pretty adorable couple.
Indeed, the Gorgon and the telepath.
Oh, I didn't say that.
What's that?
What?
What's that?
So, after this confiding, you know, she comes to a sudden realization and at a point hands over the thematic compass to him because it seems a little wonky. Something's not right. So, he goes below deck, and as he gets down below deck, the seas have become choppier, and it's not as smooth as he needs it to be, but it was good enough. So he takes apart the thematic compass. Yeah, I know, not a great idea on choppy seas, but he did it anyways. And at the core, he found a loose gear. So he tightened it down, put everything back together again, and then it had a clear, discernible light towards a place in the distance. I mean, he couldn't really see the edge of where it was going because he was at the bottom of the ship. And he thought to himself, What if this points to something? Like, why did it point to me when they came here? Why did they pick me up? So he thinks, well, maybe that thing that I did that brought me to feeling really safe and comfortable in my core could have altered it. So we know he tries to planeswalk away. And in doing so, he gets locked back out because Ixalan said no. And the thematic compass pointed to him. And he's like, oh my god, it is pointing to where we need to go. It must be some source of great power to have this much draw. And at that moment, he's like, I've got to tell Vraska. So he runs up and tells, oh, wait a minute. That's a Legion of Dusk ship on top of choppy seas and a thunderstorm that's coming out. So they're figuring out what they're going to do. And yep. They have two choices. Either try and board the Legion of Dusk ship or crash down on the rocks. And they decided they didn't want to go with the vampires, so they batten down everything. They try to make sure that it doesn't get damaged, and they...
Vraska yells, abandon ship. Abandon ship.
Yeah. And last thing you know, they crash down.
Yep. And this moment in the story is represented by the story card, River's Rebuke. And looking at the art here, if you look really closely at the front of the ship...
Is that...
You see... the vampire captain of the previous ship that they assaulted in a previous story tied to the front.
I got a question for you here. On River's Rebuke, there are a pair of merfolk. Could they have possibly been Kumena and Tishana fighting?
I think that you are absolutely correct. I think Kumena is summoning the waves, trying to knock these ships into the water, and there's Tishana trying to counter Kumena's spells. So, yeah, absolutely. Without a doubt. Any predictions on what we might be seeing next in the coming stories?
Well, I mean, things that I expect is that there's going to be some moments of vulnerability between Jace and Vraska. They will find the spires of Orozca, because the Mana Compass is going to do that. I think if we do it thematically, it might be on the 7th story, so 2 stories away.
Okay.
I also have a feeling that we're going to have a run-in with Tishana and Kumena here in a moment with these two hapless lovers. And in the long run, I mean, talking after we get off of Ixalan and out of this plane that we don't know what it actually is, which could potentially be Dominaria, for all we know.
Well, if there's power that is beyond, you know, any person's right to wield, who else would be after it than our favorite dragon planeswalker, who might want to bring it back to Dominaria to do some pretty nasty things?
But
if I were to guess anything, venture a guess here, I would have to say, going back to your prediction about the thematic compass being semi-sentient, it definitely sees things that it needs to see. It sees magic, you know, wherever it is present. And I'm leaning more away to from my initial prediction about this all being part of Nicol Bolas' plan. He just wants what everyone else wants.
Power.
That is the power. Exactly.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think it's going to be used by somebody. I think our next story probably will focus around that white-black vampire legend.
Possibly. We haven't talked about Vona yet, so that is of interest. Although, yeah, I think it might be something that we'll toss into maybe during the second set. I mean, we had that happen with the last block, where they introduced us to a legendary in the first set, but you didn't really get to deal with them until the second set.
That's true. The only other legendary vampire I can think of is Mavren Fiend. And he actually, I'm just looking at his flavor text right here. It says, In the rapture of his blood fast, he destroyed the navigator's tools and steered the ship to shore by faith alone. So it almost sounds like he's captaining a ship that is headed towards this golden city as well.
I mean, what if that other Legion of Dust ship that we just came across was Mavren Fane's?
Oh, it could be. It
because
really
the navigator's tools are trying to throw off the ship and this and that.
Yeah, It would be really cool to see how Mavren Fane fits into this storyline here. So, we will probably be getting a story with some kind of vampire coming up in the next week or so. But
I do have one long-term kind of hope, maybe dream. I kind of have a feeling that Liliana is going to renege on her oath to the Gatewatch and become a part of Nicol Bolas's team. And that void is possibly going to get filled by Vraska.
Okay. Because so going back to your prediction about Vraska eventually becoming a member of the Gatewatch, possibly.
I think it's a lot more possible than we thought because she is there for the downtrodden and her people. And there's quite a big chance that, you know, she'll want to go out there and save other people after helping the Golgari and the downtrodden of the Golgari rise up.
Huh. Okay. I could get behind that. That sounds like very
interesting. We're talking years, but...
Right. Time will tell.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting idea. All right. So, as we come to a close on our lore corner, I believe you yourself had some fun recently, and it's currently uploading.
It is. So, I bought a box of Ixalan. I bought a box and a bundle, actually. And I have had a lot of fun opening it, and I knew I wasn't going to be getting too much product, considering we just had this baby. So, trying to keep the funds in line here. But either way, with the starting up of our YouTube channel, I wanted to do a little box opening video. So I had some fun doing that. Be ready to check that out when it goes live, probably the next day or so. But what I was really looking forward to, as I look forward to with every box, is opening up a bunch of sweet cards, probably at least 3 mythics, and whatever the foil rare was. I was just super excited to see, you know, all the contents of my box. So I definitely was not disappointed. I got a Vraska. I got a Growing Rights of Itlamok. I had a Search for Escanta. Got a whole bunch of other really, really interesting cards that I'm really looking forward to playing with. But one of the things that just kind of stuck out to me, there was no foil rare in this box.
Or mythic.
And I don't know if that's a normal thing or if that's a... You can expect to get one of these every once in a while, but I was just always under the assumption that you get a foil rare in every box. It's pretty standard. Has that pretty much been the case for you, Greg? Every time
most
you get a box?
Of the time, I'm either getting a foil rare, a foil mythic, or it's like 15 foil common or uncommons is what I've come across. But it's pretty rare that you're not getting a rare. It's usually like one in every 3 boxes.
Right.
Maybe
and
4.
I pulled a total of 3 mythics. And, they were good.
33 rares.
Exactly. but it was just weird. You know, that was what I was really looking forward to during the box opening is always, you know, what's the foil rare you're going to get? And having done this box opening video, I went, onto YouTube and looked up a whole bunch of box opening videos and saw people opening multiple foil rares in some boxes. But, it was just a little weird. Definitely got a lot of stuff to brew with, so I'm really happy about that. But something I wanted to kind of bring to light because it was a little odd.
Did you pay at least 2 colors into that bring to light?
I did. In fact, you know what? I paid all 5.
Ooh.
I paid all 5 colors, so I got to search.
Time to get that Regisaur Alpha.
There you go. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, I did get a Ripjaw Raptor, too. That was pretty sweet. Yeah, my bundle, I got a Huatly, so I was pretty excited about that. Love me some Planeswalkers. But yeah, can't wait to really dive in, start brewing and seeing what kind of stuff I can get into. In fact, Greg, there's quite a few cards in this set, you being the EDH aficionado that you are, quite a few cards that you have either been surprised about or just cannot wait to pull out in a game of EDH. Do you want to bring us through a couple of these cards?
So I'm going to speak specifically on Ixalan cards here, because there's a couple other cards I think are real gems in older sets that if you didn't get, you should go get them. But we won't talk about those today. One of my first cards, I think this card is absolutely busted, whether you're playing in a mono red deck or red X. But this is Sunbird's Invocation. And what it says is anytime you cast a spell from your hand, reveal the top X cards of your library. You may cast a card from among them
where X converted is the converted mana cost
X or less.
Yeah.
And you reveal X, where X is the CMC. So essentially, you drop a 7 drop, you get to look at the top 7 cards and cast a 7 or less. I cannot tell you. I had a guy playing this against me. He played 3 spells in one turn, so that was 6 spells in one turn. Free spells are busted, as we know from Cascade, and the fact that you get free spells based on cast, and you don't always get a card, but it's just so good. It's not regulated.
There's actually, I mean, I know you didn't want to talk about too many old cards, but there's quite a few doubling spells. I mean, just talking about instants and sorceries. I mean, there's a flip card that leaves us with a legendary land that copies the stuff too.
I mean, that was one of the ones I was going to talk about.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. There you go.
That primal amulet that makes instant and sorceries cost less. I mean, so it makes your Sunbird's Invocation even stronger. And once it gets 4 counters on it from spells being cast, whether they're from your hand, your deck, or your graveyard, it transforms. Now, this isn't an end of turn transform. It's a transform now thing when you get the 4th counter. And it says add a mana of any color. And you may copy the spell that you're casting with it, as long as it's an instant or sorcery.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty decent. It's a lot of fun.
Pretty good, yeah.
I have done some hilarious things with this card. They both work really well together. And then there are some other cards that make them busted. Mind's Dilation.
Swarm Intelligence.
Yeah. Just to name a couple. If you can look them up, you should. But yeah, Sunbird's Invocation, Primal Amulet, these cards are strong. If you ever have trouble with mana, you're playing that Journeyer's Kite, Demonic Compass is strictly better. Especially if you want to replace your Maze of Ith or get a cheap Maze of Ith, because it does the same thing as it, but it also taps for colorless, which is something Maze of Ith does not do.
That's very true.
So, yeah.
Can be better. Absolutely. Has a couple qualifying factors to get it flipped, but once it does, you're home free.
These are a few of the hidden gems. I mean, all of these cards are under $3.
Well, you had another one that you wanted to talk about, too. A black enchantment. That costs
So this is actually an uncommon, and I think this is a great card to replace with when you're running a Megrim. Because, you know, Megrim just, it doesn't do a lot. It says, okay, well, you discard cards, you take damage. But Raider's Wake does the same thing as a Megrim. Whenever an opponent discards a card, they lose 2 life. But it has an extra trigger, and it says Raid. At the end of your turn, if you attacked with a creature, each of your opponents discards a card. I cannot tell you, this is actually just great. You have an unblockable 0 something. You're like, okay, I'll swing in for 0. No damage it. And then you play your Raider's Wake, and they go, I see why you attacked for 0. That was so nice of you. And everybody else has to discard a card.
Yeah, just bringing up again old cards to play with this. Would you want to play, what's that black enchantment where discarding matters?
Oh, you mean Waste Not?
Waste Not. There you go. That sounds like a wonderful pair with this.
Yeah, it is pretty good. But this is an automatic replacement for like a Megarim. Oh, and sorry, it's not each opponent, it is target opponent.
Okay.
But
still.
For paying one more, this is really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then one card, I know you were focusing kind of on the EDH aspect here, but one card that I must say I thought was going to be extremely strong and in certain situations, especially at the SCG that happened this last weekend, really proved to be a very powerful card. And that card is Settle the Wreckage. That's 2 and 2 white for an instant that says exile all attacking creatures target player controls. That player may search his or her library for that many basic land cards. Put those cards in the battlefield tapped and shuffle his or her library. We mentioned this, I believe, last episode and said that if you have you're playing against a deck with a greedy mana base, they may not be able to go and find any lands because they have to find basic lands. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, there was a guy playing a, hold on here, let me get the exact name so I can be proper with it.
Ramanop Red. No.
Yeah. Hang on. Let me get to the
open standard. Man. Have you seen the price go up on Scarab God?
Yeah. It's like $40.
Yeah. And that, okay. Hostage Taker.
Oh, the Hostage Taker's like $20 too. Yeah.
Yup.
Okay, so David Thomas in his blue white approach to the Second Sun deck was playing against Tad Makareg, who was playing Ramanop Red. And just to give you an idea of what can happen in the interaction between Settle the Wreckage, you know, if you swing in with like 3 creatures, you play Settle the Wreckage, and then they get to go and look for 3 lands and play them. You know, and then obviously their turn's over, and then the control deck can do whatever they want: cast Approach of the Second Sun or play Torrential Gearhulk or whatever they want to do. But on the following turn, you just gave your opponent like 3 more lands, and then they get to play another land if they drop it. I mean, we're talking they can drop a Glorybringer and a Hazoret in the same turn, both of which have haste, which can then come swinging at you for 9 damage just with those two. So it is a great card, great way to get rid of threats, incoming threats, but be prepared to back it up with something else, because especially when you're playing against red, haste is a real thing. So definitely a very powerful card to get rid of things, especially if they're playing non-basics, but above all else, be ready for that crackback, because they're going to come back even stronger than, you know, when you actually cast the card.
Right.
So good to have in multiples. Great to have in multiples, but one card that I would love to see paired with this in maybe a black-white standard deck would be Dream Stealer, because if you're able to Settle the Wreckage and then get in with a Dream Stealer, either the one power or 4 power 1, that just seems extremely strong, and I would love to build that deck and play that. So, but anyway.
So, funny thing, you talk about Torrential Gearhulk with Settle the Wreckage. He had Torrential Gearhulk in his sideboard. Kind of surprised it wasn't in his main. But you could Torrential Gearhulk Settle the Wreckage.
Yes. Yes, you can. Absolutely. So, if you're running... Oh, here. Let's just see how many of these he was running. 2 Settle the Wreckage in the main.
You said David Thomas, right?
Oh, I'm looking at the wrong one here. David Thomas, there we go.
He had 3 in the main and 1 in the side.
1 in the side for the full 4.
Yep.
Correct. Okay. And, Settle the Wreckage is already almost $5. Man, pre-selling for like $1 or $2. I should have got my playset when I could have.
Yeah, you should have.
But, yeah, running those four Settle the Wreckages because, yeah, absolutely, if you follow one up with the other, plus you've got those Torrential Gear Hulks. I mean, he had two. That you're running six copies of Settle the Wreckage. That's very, very strong, especially in an approach to the Second Sun deck where you're not concerned with what your opponent has as long as you can play that second approach of the Second Sun and keep yourself alive in the meantime. So, wow. Have you seen Gideon of the Trials' price now?
No. What is it?
Market price is $18.
Wow.
Talk about a jump.
Yeah, that is a big jump.
That guy was like less than $8 a couple weeks ago. That's crazy.
Yes.
Holy moly.
Avona made it into top 8.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. In Brendan DiCandio's Esper gift deck, running Angel Inventions, Champion of Wits, Hostage Taker. This card has been a blowout of a card. I mean, everybody was thinking that the card to play was going to be Carnage Tyrant, and there was only like four of them in the top 64.
Yeah, where is Carnage Tyrant? Where is the Chase Mythic?
I think I saw it in like 50th place. although, remember, we do have World Championship Standard Constructed and Draft this weekend. I believe they start tomorrow.
That's true. Yes,
I'm
we
really
have great,
excited for that.
Great weekend of competitive Magic ahead of us. But, yeah, let's take a look here for a second at this, you know, powerhouse of a card, in quotes, Carnage Tyrant. I mean, it's a 7/6 trample, hexproof, can't be countered. You know what it can be? It can be committed.
Yeah.
And then it can be memoried away. You can cast Settle the Wreckage to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
You can make your opponent sacrifice an attacking creature. You can just make them sacrifice a creature, period. I mean, doesn't Doomfall do that? There's so many ways to get around the Carnage Tyrant that I really think that this card is not going to see any real tier one standard play. I mean,
I agree completely.
It the flavor text is funny, you know, like what is it? Usually the correct move is to deploy the gigantic death lizard or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great card. It's fun. It's big. It's beefy. It's a great flagship for a dinosaur set. I mean, this dinosaur is hard to mess with. But in reality, when you get into tier one competitive play in standard, more so than anything, you're looking for answers.
Four drops. You know, four drops is where it's at.
Yeah, there you go. And even if you're ramping, even if you're casting Hour of, what is Hour of Promise?
Or Hour of Promise, yeah.
And you're ramping. Like, it's one creature, and by the time you get to that point, if you're not already dead, if Ramunap Red hasn't already ran you over, then you're not really looking like a viable deck. So, I'm just going to say Carnage Tyrant, good card, but probably like a $10 card once everything shakes out. If you're playing Thrun and Modern, you know, you might want to consider Carnage Tyrant instead, but I mean,
no, the six drop and the non regenerating Thrun is still better.
I don't know, because you do have to maintain Thrun with the regeneration and all that stuff, and the, you know, I know neither of them can be countered, but the 7 power with trample is huge, and it's so hard to deal with, but I don't know. We'll see. But
we'll see.
Definitely do not think Carnage Tyrant has earned its place at its $30 price tag. Don't think it will.
Agreed. I was helping a buddy out with a deck, and he was going real wide. He wanted to be a Nia Dinah's deck and run Verdor's Gearhulk, and I made the suggestion to be a little bit more aggressive. Instead of running your Verdor's Gearhulk, why don't you try Metallic Mimic?
Right.
Because ultimately, it kind of does the same thing. And it eats their removal earlier.
Yeah.
So you could get out your bigger dinos that you don't want to die. So, ultimately, I think it's been a better deck. looking at it, I'm kind of excited to see it get played, and I'm kind of thinking that something like this might get played this weekend. I'm still worried for all the energy decks, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, why don't we dive into some of these decks here that we saw this last weekend in our first week of standard competitive play. If we just wanted to break down the Dallas Open, the first place deck, piloted by Andrew Jessup, Sultai Energy, took down the whole entire tournament.
Yeah.
And
if and it was also fourth place.
Yes. Yeah. So many of you know about Teamer Energy. It was definitely the top deck in the format for quite some time. But with rotation, we've got some new iterations on this deck. Definitely very, very strong. Specifically, Winding Constrictor is a great addition to this energy deck, seeing as cards that will generate you energy will generate one more energy if you have a Winding Constrictor in play. You get the added benefit of mana ramping through Rishkar. You also get, you know, your Long Tusk Cub, any energy deck staple. Then you've also got the addition of Hostage Taker, since it is a Sultai deck. Hostage Taker was everywhere this last weekend. I mean, you want to talk about a card that earns its price tag. You know, its market price is about $16, and rightfully so. It has just dominated games.
And to throw out there, the Scarab God is making a huge, huge showing. So that guy being at $39, it seems high. I think a lot of that draws because EDH players want it on top of standard players.
That is true. And I mean, it's only being run as a one of in this winning deck. So if only having and then there's one on the board too.
Right.
So you don't even need a full four of, and it's still, you know, barking up a $40 price tag. So that's pretty nuts.
Yeah.
For a standard card. Glintsleeve Siphoner for that energy and that card draw. Rogue Refiner for more card draw. I mean, this deck is just value on top of value. There's no reason why a deck like this shouldn't be one of the top tier decks that you play. And then being in blue gives you access to those negates and spell pierce on the sideboard. I mean, not to mention the Scarab God. But you have a distinct control aspect that you can swing with this deck too. So very, very good. Very exciting variation on an oldie but goodie in standard. Then we have...
Like 20 energy decks, a bunch of Ramunap Reds, which we've all seen.
Green Black Energy.
Godfarer's Gift in the top 8. Definitely making it there.
It's an Esper build.
When we get down lower, some interesting builds. There's a White Green Vampires deck. Blue Black Control. I think the one that I found most interesting, though, was at the SCG Classic. It didn't do real well, but there is a green-white cats deck that
By
did
the way,
really well.
Guess what card was in that Esper God Pharaoh's Gift deck in the top 8?
Scarab God? Hostage Taker?
Hostage Taker. 4 of. Pulling one of those out with your God Pharaoh's Gift seems pretty dumb.
That seems pretty brutal.
Yeah. Now I'll change gears with you and join you at the... SCG Classic here.
There's some cool cards. It's kind of interesting to see the deck that won that being a Grixis Improvise, which is something that didn't even make it in the open.
This is awesome. Oh my gosh. I've been trying to make Improvise happen ever since freaking, you know, Aether Revolt came out.
It's got an Inventor's Fair there.
It does. It does. Is it running? No, it's not. Okay. I was just wondering to see if it was running Inspiring Statuary.
It is running a 4 of Herald of Anguish, which you can eat your your servos, you can eat your Ethereum blah blah blahs. Your lotus petals that Tezzeret makes.
There you go. Yeah.
To give -2/-2. There's so much good control in this deck. It's cool.
Oh my god. This deck is sweet. Holy cow. 3 Tezzeret the Schemers. Of course, you've got your Scarab God because blue-black.
Mm-hmm.
Maverick Thopterus. That makes sense. You got your Herald of Anguish. Contraband Kingpin. First time I've seen that guy since the old Aether Sphere Reservoir decks back in the day of Kaladesh.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a whole bunch of other rinky-dink artifacts that just make it all work. 4 Metallic Rebuke. Yes, I am such a proponent, as you would know if you listen to our Top 10 Counterspells episode. Honorable mention, Metallic Rebuke right here, perfect example. It's just so good, especially with all these extra little artifacts floating around. Sorcerer's Spyglass, making a great addition here.
So moving on, I'm sorry. This is...
Oh, so good.
Can't let you talk about it all night. Do you see what took 9th place?
9th place was a white-black tokens deck?
You should take a look. It might look familiar.
Oh, man. Oh, Ketra the True. Master Trinketeer. Anointed Procession. Dude, this is like your deck right here. You and Anointed Procession are just match made in heaven.
But this is very much the same exact thing that MTG Goldfish, thank you guys, because you came up with the Aristocrats deck. That is what this is. But instead of running the cats, they're running better cards. Sorry.
Yeah.
But the Servo Exhibition, the Hidden Stockpile, it's all there.
I mean, I can see the 1 Fumigate in the main, you know, and I'm thinking, why not more? You got your 2 in the sideboard. But
they have the space for the Settle the Wreckage, because I think it says exile all attacking creatures.
Yes.
So it hits you or your opponent. So you could swing into a fruitless board, Settle the Wreckage, Raid Trigger off of Hidden Stockpile, and empty your deck of lands.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
That feels really strong.
Build yourself up for a huge, huge next turn.
And then don't get any bad top decks.
Right, but I mean, okay, so that's 1 true board wipe in Fumigate, but it's running 2 Vraska's Contempt. Finish off of Start to Finish is essentially Bone Splinters, but for 3 at sorcery speed, but that's sacrifice a creature to destroy target creature, and you've got plenty of stuff to sacrifice here. You've got your Settle the Wreckage, which is like a one-sided board wipe.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got your Fatal Push, which, again, really, really good single-target removal. 4 Duress in the sideboard to take care of those nasty spell. 2 cast outs.
Don't forget that those 2 Lost Legacies there, too.
This could really turn into a control deck, you know, really fast, but very interesting.
And then it also has the Ifnir Deadlands in the main. And did you see the Legion's Landing?
Oh, no, I did not. That is sweet. That's
and then add on
right
top
there.
Of all that, the Shefnut Dunes. So, like, you get a lot of just options with this deck. And sure, I understand why they're not running a lot of removal, because the board's already so filled with creatures with this deck. They don't care. They just block for days and get extra stuff.
I like how they list these new flip cards under the lands, because obviously that's what they get when they flip, but like Legion's Landing is a legendary enchantment, but they list it under lands here. I find that a little interesting.
Yeah, I don't know why they're doing that, but hey, their choice, not ours.
Right. No, this is actually quite strong, and this actually is similar to a deck that I want to talk about as we kind of round out the episode, but I'll save that for when we get there. And then one other deck that I wanted to mention about here, if you go down to, 19th place, piloted by Tristan Barrera, it's Mono Black Aggro. And, I mean, there's some synergy in here that I was watching this actually on coverage just going, this is genius. Like, it's so good. Specifically, you've got Rune Raider, which is, you know, the pirate variant on Dark Confidant. But it operates off of a raid trigger. So for 2 and a black, it's a 3/2 that says, at the beginning of your end step, if you've attacked with a creature this turn, reveal the top card of your library and put that card into your hand. You lose life equal to that card's converted mana cost. So this deck is also running 4 Glint Sleeve Siphoners. While everyone thinks of this as extra card draw, which it is, so you're already running 2 card draw engines, it's a 2/1 with Menace for 2. And Menace is one of the most overlooked abilities a creature can have, especially in an aggro deck. So you're going to get those attack triggers there. Vicious Conquistadors, he's running 3 of them. 1/2 for 1. Whenever it attacks, each opponent loses a life, so you have incentive to attack right there. It's running a Key to the City, which will guarantee you something gets unblockable and gets through to activate those raid triggers. I mean, this is just super-duper value, aggro, and card draw. Like, these cards just work so well together, and it's going to be, like, super easy for you to cast everything and attack. So, I love this deck. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
I actually completely agree. While we're still talking about this black deck, did you see the Doomfall in the sideboard?
Oh, yeah.
Does that not deal with Carnage Tyrant?
It does. Yeah, I think I mentioned that earlier. Yeah, you can definitely force them to sacrifice their Carnage Tyrant.
So, do you just want to wrap it up and talk about Modern?
Yeah, okay. We can touch on that next time. I'll have them written down here so we can revisit that later. But anyway, yeah, that'll do it for us this week. Just a reminder, head on over to Flipside Gaming, flipsidegaming.com, and any order that you make off of their website, $10 or more, use the promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save 10% off your purchase and contribute to our future show giveaways.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, all that being said...
Where can they find us?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MTG_Sean.
You can find me at NoobSlasher2003.
And the show is at The Win Condition. You can find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/TeamWinCondition. Our email address is at TheWinCondition Podcast@gmail.com. And we are finally firing up our YouTube channel, which is The Win Condition. Yep. You guessed it. So look for that. We're having our box opening video up there pretty soon, and we'll be producing content for you as frequently as we can. Just trying it out.
Hopefully I'll see what I can do about maybe doing my Monday night EDH games.
That would be exciting.
A lot of information there. And maybe tell them to keep it PG.
Yep. Yeah, right. We have the bleep button, so we're good to go.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks you all for listening. And we will talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Have a good night.